Blog Talk Radio.
And coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City and Weehawken, New Jersey, respectively. This is the latest edition of Work in the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio. I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist and top 100 Latino via the Latino Spirit Online Magazine for 2020, 2021, and 2022. Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PR superstar, Patrick Rivera, here on Work in the Marks. What's going on, PR superstar?
How you doing, Professor? It's good to be with you. I was just always wondering, the Latino spirit, like, is it like just like the spirit of Eddie Guerrero or something like that, or is it just a bunch of people drinking like cheap beer, playing dominoes? Like, what exactly goes on during the Latino spirit? I'm curious to know.
Well, I'll have you know, ladies and gentlemen, it is a very reputable online news magazine in New Jersey where they highlight prominent Hispanic and Latino and Latina, right, because that's what we're going by, professionals in a multitude of different fields. What's that?
Do they give awards to Latinx? The Latinx?
No. They're like Bill Maher. They don't believe in that stuff. Like I don't either. So, at least the news site features prominent professionals in the fields of law, business, real estate, academia, education, medicine. So, you know, they feature the most prominent Hispanics every single year, and you know the professor happens to be in the list 3 years in a row. So. I'm almost getting like Owen Hart here.
It's something. I thought it was a gimmick all along, to be quite honest. I don't even know. But, yeah, there you go, folks. And you know what? The professor never misses an opportunity to put himself over. Let's not forget all right?
That's right. Well, Pat, I got to tell you, it's a busy week here. We got a lot to cover here. We got a preview of Forbidden Door. Ultimately, maybe tomorrow's, you know, 9-hour pay-per-view for AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling. We'll get to that a little bit later. But let's tackle the news here. And something that really caught the eye of a lot of people on social media, specifically the Twitterverse and the Instagramverse, really went nuts this week. And, you know, Booker T, two-time WWE Hall of Famer, you know, was just talking on his regular podcast, making observations. His podcast, which is really, really prominently featured, it's called The Reality of Wrestling Podcast. Booker just came out very publicly and said, you know, he suspects that the reason that Adam Cole is dealing with multiple injuries is by the virtue of just being very bottom light, as he referred to it, and lacking in muscle. He says, quote, if Adam Cole has to have surgery and he's down for 6-9 months and he, you know, loses any more muscle, it's going to be hard on this brother. You know what I'm saying? Right now, he's about $160. And let me tell you, I think Booker was just being observant as a guy with, you know, a great physique his entire career, a guy who took care of himself, was hardly ever injured. A lot of people on social media, a lot of wrestling personalities, more present than past, really took Booker to task. You had John Moxley's wife, Renee Paquette, accusing Booker of body shaming. She tweeted this week, quote, body shaming is the absolute shits. What the F is happening right now? Totally thought we were moving past talking about people like this. While the focus is normally on women, I've had many men talk to me about body dysmorphia, piss up a rope. Other people, Eddie Kingston, came to Adam Cole's defense. A lot of people thought and accused Booker T of body shaming. I don't think it is. I think, listen, in a profession where your presentation, your physique, your look is kind of what helps get you over to some extent. He doesn't look very, again, be it far from me. I have one ab, you know, I don't have five abs, but you know, I'm a journalist. I'm an educator. I'm not out there working with my shirt off. You know, for a guy that looks a little scrawny, you know, I think, you know, Booker T was onto something, but I think people want to spin it the way they want to spin it, Pat.
I agree with you 100%. You know, I mean, again, like, it's like when I broke into the business, right? And granted, I'm not making myself out to be this great, amazing worker. I was okay at the very best. But when, you know, when we were training, my cousin and I, when we were learning, and when we were under the learning tree of Andrew Anderson, you know, he always told us, listen to what the vets say. Even if you don't like it, listen to it. Because they know, because they've been there before and they understand. Booker T has been one of the most successful wrestlers of the last 20 years. Booker T has been a world champion. Booker T's been everywhere he's ever worked. You know, he's been over everywhere he's worked. And Booker T is a guy that had a lot of natural charisma. Adam Cole does too, but I think it would behoove Adam Cole to maybe not be offended and to hear what Booker's saying and to listen to it, to take that advice and to run with it and to use it as a way to make himself better. You know, how are you going to get better if you don't listen to people who have been there, people who have experience, people who can help you, people who have the knowledge? You know what I mean? Like, there's no difference between Booker T telling him or Triple H telling him. Adam Page was another person that I think chimed in. And again, like, I just think it's just absolutely ridiculous that their initial response is to be mad about this instead of taking this constructive advice and saying, gee, you know what? I don't look the part that I'm trying to portray myself to be. I could use, you know, some time in the gym. I could get in shape. You know what I mean? And even when I was training, you know, I was still working out. My cousin and I were still hitting the gym. You know what I mean? And you know, we had a little size on us for you know, for the height that we were. But, you know, we mainly worked on things to help us, you know, stay healthy. Things that the older guys told, hey, work on your neck, work on your traps, work on your back, you know, work on your abs, your chest, you know, your arms, stuff like that. Squat, you know, whole body workouts to keep you prepared. Not only that, but just calisthenics to keep you fit, you know, for that. Adam Cole's a really good wrestler, and he understands wrestling. I think he's maybe perhaps a little too complacent, a little too afraid to challenge himself. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's, you know, he's just comfortable. Who knows? You know, it could be the complacency thing. But I don't see anything wrong with what Booker said. And I think, again, you know, not just Booker, but other people there should really take the advice. You know what I mean? And this isn't the first time that this has happened. You know, you had the incident with JR, where JR was calling out, you know, the high spots, you know, where all these guys would go, they'd powder out of the ring, and then they'd all huddle up together, you know, and throw these little bullshit punches until somebody did a moonsault and they all caught them. It looks phony. It looks pretend. You know what I mean? And there's ways that you can improve it. You know, and I just think for those people who are wrestlers now, if you love wrestling and you want wrestling to keep going, listen to the advice of some of these old timers. Apply it to some of the stuff you're doing now. Slow it down with the high spots. Make them mean more. Tell a story. Tell a story around those high spots. Don't do just 50 of them in a match just to do it, just to get a pop. But, yeah, long story short, I think there's a lot of thin skin over there in AEW. And I think that they need to take the advice of a guy like Booker T a little bit more seriously. Not just Adam Cole, but a lot of guys on that roster.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think it's something that people really, again, saw what they want to see and they heard what they wanted to hear. And listen, someone like Booker T, who is very knowledgeable in the business, a guy that if I was starting a wrestling company tomorrow, obviously, I know it wouldn't be possible because it was contractual obligations to Vince, but in a perfect world, I'd hire someone like Booker T as a consultant. I'd hire other guys that have been fixtures in the business who understand what works and what doesn't. So, again, I just think, listen, Pat, again, this is a topic that I talk about on my Monday show. Folks, again, Real Talk with Jersey First TV at 6 p.m. Eastern time. You know, it just seems like, you know, AEW is sort of symptomatic of some people on social media just get very sensitive over the slightest critique. And in this case, I think it was constructive criticism by Booker T. It was constructive criticism. I think that's what people are losing here.
Like Fern, here's the thing, okay? Like, let's say, granted, he passed away, right? Well, let's say Peter Jennings contacted you, or Peter Jennings said, hey, Fernando Uribe, he's good, but he could do with X, Y, and Z. Would you get offended by that? Or would you take that into consideration of, gee, you know what? This is the great Peter Jennings. You know, this guy, like, he's been around forever. He's been a television presenter for years at a very high level. Like, you know, you would consider that. If Tucker Carlson said that to you, or even people you don't like, let's say Anderson Cooper, somebody, anybody like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, you would at least take that because you know that they've been in a position and they have the experience to be able to help you, to help you improve. So, again, it's not negative. It's constructive criticism. And again, like, you know, to your point, and I'm not trying to get political here, you know that, but, yeah, it's a problem online that you see across the board in a lot of different things, not just politics, but in wrestling too, you know? These guys are big boys. It's a tough business. You got to have thick skin. So, you know, take the advice or don't, but, you know, stop being so soft about it. Be open to it.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. And speaking about content online that's drawing controversy again, whether it was Booker T, but another WWE Hall of Famer apparently is also in the crosshairs of a lot of people in pro wrestling. Glenn Jacobs, formerly Kane, the WWE Hall of Famer, the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, got some vitriol on Twitter and on Instagram as a result of yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court, and what was leaked for months now, voted in favor of Mississippi's ban on abortions after 15 weeks of debate, thus overturning Roe versus Wade, the landmark 1973 decision, ruling that guarantees federal constitutional protections of abortion rights. The practice of abortion, once legal on a federal level, will now be addressed as a state-level issue going forward. So, for example, certain states, including Arkansas, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Texas, and others have trigger laws, state trigger laws, that immediately put the ban into effect now that the ruling is determined. Another one of those trigger states happens to be Tennessee, the home of Knox County Mayor, WWE Hall of Famer Glenn Jacobs, and another really prominent name in the Republican Party in not just Tennessee, but this is a guy who's a very, very visible person within the party. Jacobs took to Twitter to praise the decision of the Roe versus Wade being overturned. He wrote, this clears the way for states like Tennessee to pass stronger protections for the unborn and is an answer to a prayer for so many. Hashtag right to life, hashtag victory, wrote Glenn Jacobs. Well, soon enough, right after that Twitter went viral, Glenn Jacobs was, I mean, it was a tsunami, whether it was current Impact Wrestling Knockouts Tag Team Champion, Taya Valkyrie, the wife of John Morrison, Johnny Elite, I guess, All Elite Wrestling. She went on to call Glenn Jacobs an idiot, absolute idiot, STFU, you little piece of, you know, SHIT. Kip Sabian from AEW wrote, oh, F off, Yankum, you tosspot, hashtag pro-choice. Yankum is a reference to a failed character gimmick that Jacobs tried out in the mid-90s before he got over as a legendary Big Red Machine Kane. Former AEW Women's Champion and the winner of the inaugural Owen Hart Foundation Memorial Cup Tournament, Britt Baker, also contributed to the comments, quote, no wonder you couldn't cut it as a dentist, hashtag idiot, which I thought was kind of ironic to just, you know, could have cut it as a dentist when that's not really his profession.
Yeah,
you know.
That's not, but it's actually kind of funny, like in the context of it, like, yeah, that's actually kind of funny, you know.
Yeah,
because he played
really
a dentist. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's really myopic by Baker. Perhaps the most constructive of the responses was from Paige, who will be officially released from her contract coming up on July 7th. She wrote, quote, Glenn, you were an idol of mine, and I sung your praises to anyone I met. But this is the biggest piece of SHIT take from you ever. Very disappointing that you think controlling women's bodies and taking away our rights is a victory. Again, other wrestlers are opining. Rosemary from Impact Wrestling opined and others. You know, Pat, again, you know, this is something I'll talk about on my Monday show, not about Glenn Jacobs specifically, but about what this court decision means. But, you know, this is where, you know, pro wrestlers who are either mainstream people and to get into politics, like, you know, again, I like Glenn Jacobs. I've met him years ago. I mean, Glenn Jacobs isn't like some, you know, weightlifting wrestler that doesn't know anything. I mean, Glenn Jacobs is the executive of a municipality. He's a guy that has become very prominently featured nationally as a very proud libertarian slash Republican. I mean, I'm sure he was going to expect this. I'm sure he's going to expect this about an issue that is going to be very volatile, very emotional. As we know, the last 24 hours have been crazy on social media. I don't know. Maybe there's something maybe Glenn Jacobs could have wished he could have taken back, but it seems like he'll keep doubling down because he seems to be one of those very outspoken Republicans in the South.
Look, man, I mean, I don't agree with him, but he's entitled to his opinion without people wishing death upon him, or, you know, trying to harm him or his family or, you know, any of that other stuff. You don't have to look at it. I mean, I think that you're kind of naive at this point if you didn't think that he was going to feel this way based on his affiliation with the Republican Party, you know, and being also, you know, libertarian as well. But, like, you know, you kind of knew that he would think this way. So why are you surprised? It's very simple. Just mute it. Don't look at it. Unfriend him. Don't follow him. He was a tremendous professional wrestler. He was great. One of the best big men, arguably the best big man ever, right? He was one of the more memorable characters of the Attitude Era. But, you know, the guy got into politics and he feels the way he feels. I can only imagine what Twitter would have been like, you know, had it been around when Jesse Ventura was governor. That would have been pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I don't agree with him. I kind of understand why he feels the way he feels, but I'm not going to, like, completely shut him out as a wrestler or cancel him or any of that other stuff because I'm a fucking adult. And I understand that people have different opinions on things. Again, I don't like it. I don't like what happened yesterday. And by the way, I want you to know that I want to throw up right now because we've been talking about politics for way too long on this show right now. But the bottom line is that he's entitled to feel how he wants to feel. You're entitled to feel how you want to feel. You don't have mm-hmm. to threaten him, or you don't have to discredit him as a professional wrestler just because you don't like his opinion on something. There's plenty of people that I know that are Red Sox fans, right? And I'm cool with them. And to me, Red Sox fans are the lowest scum in the earth, you know? But that's me. You know what I'm saying? That's me. So, mm-hmm. bottom line, people, you don't like something, mute it. Unfollow. Unfriend. You don't have to drive yourself fucking nuts over nothing, okay? You don't like somebody's opinion? Don't talk to them. You know what I'm saying? Or, better yet, go talk to them. Find out why they feel differently. Maybe you might learn something. Maybe you both might learn something. And maybe the both of you could go out and get a drink and have a laugh instead of hating each other and alienating one another over nonsense. But whatever.
No.
I'm done.
That's fair. No, that's fair. And, again, I'm sure that this won't be the last we'll hear of this, you know, in terms of any ritual that will be levied on Glenn Jacobs. And, you know, it's an issue that's going to continue to get a lot of emotional responses. We're seeing it even today on social media, on newspaper columns, everywhere. So I just think the little touch there of Britt Baker being a little myopic, you know, I mean, talk about it's still real to us, you know what I'm saying? When Baker was making that reference, the Isaac Yankum, I'm like, whoa, Britt, Jesus Christ, wow.
I think it was tongue-in-cheek. I think it was a tongue-in-cheek
probably.
Comment. Like,
yeah,
I don't think
no,
it was more than likely.
Definitely for sure. Our last news bit here, apparently some reputable, I mean, I use the word loosely, reported this week, Pat, that Paul Levesque, a.k.a. Triple H, made his way down to Orlando to the Performance Center, met with some talent, I think maybe more of a social call than anything. Some reporters are making the allegation that he said, I'm back. That has not been confirmed by anybody that's very reputable. Probably the most reputable is Billy Body. We're waiting for Billy Body to come out on something with that. That has not yet happened. A lot of other sites indicating that Paul Levesque did make his way down to Orlando. You know, again, this is a guy who had a pacemaker inserted into him. Clearly, his quality of life changed once that happened. He's no longer going to wrestle. I'm sure there's still an itch there for Paul Levesque to be involved in the production side. With everything going on right now in WWE, with Vince McMahon stepping down temporarily, well, or stepping down. I mean, I don't know. Again, his daughter Stephanie McMahon Levesque is the interim CEO. Clearly, that's not stopping Vince from, you know, managing his responsibilities as creative, you know, writing creative, booking, things of that nature. Certainly, Stephanie has to handle the business side of WWE, what a CEO has to do. But it was nice to hear Triple H down in Orlando, even if it was for a social call. I think familiarity helps, especially on a roster and a company that, listen, I'm sure people backstage are nervous. They don't know what's going to happen with this ongoing investigation by these law firms and by the board of directors into the, you know, what's going on with Vince McMahon, these multiple indiscretions he's had, how much money he's paid out, how it was paid. Again, nothing's been confirmed yet. Nothing's been reported. We're just speculating that, oh, you know, Vince hopefully paid off this money. No one's talked about that yet. So I think that maybe, if anything, I would suspect that Paul Levesque just went down there to kind of make people comfortable and say, oh, you know, business as usual. You know, we're continuing, right? Or production, TV. I think, if anything, it was probably more just to make sure people are at ease, because, you know, it could be a very volatile time for people working in a company, let's be honest, that's under investigation internally.
I think that's fair. I think it's time to play the game for him. I think it's time for him to come back and to get involved. I couldn't help it. But I just think that, you know, this is a dude that, like, for the last almost 30 years has been wrestling every single day of his life. And now this guy's expected to go to just, you know, staying at home now because he's got a pacemaker in his heart. Like, because, you know, he can't really, and again, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know, like, what he can or can't do or anything like that. But I can imagine that this guy sitting at home after being on the road, after being in wrestling for 30 years, now all of a sudden has to, like, you know, just chill out and has to, like, kind of just relax. I don't think he could do it. So he's been itching for this opportunity to come back. I'm sure this was all in the cards anyway. And I'm sure inevitably that this is going to get, you know, put into place. But I'm happy to hear that he is returning, whether he said that he's back or not. I mean, a lot of these guys, like these third sheet writers, they're just going to, you know, do this stuff for clickbait. But him being down there could be partially what you said, and could also just be, hey, I'm coming back, I'm getting involved again. And, you know, I'd like to see what he does when he comes back, if he is coming back to be involved on the creative side, because I thought – he was tremendous in NXT with his creative work down there.
Oh, absolutely. Again, and when you think about the success of what NXT was, and still is, obviously, but, you know, back from its original form before the reboot of 2.0, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, NXT, for years, there were takeovers that were better than some of the pay-per-views on the main roster, bro. I mean, let's be real about it. You know, we've talked about this off the air a lot, you know. Going to takeovers here in the New York area, New Jersey area, like, people marked out, excuse the pun here, for the way takeovers were promoted and booked and everything. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes with Paul Levesque again, how involved he'll be.
It was great. Like all the stuff he did with NXT was great. I thought it was really good stuff. And again, like, people want to talk about, oh, WWE doesn't make any stars, and they haven't made any new stars. Most of the guys that are on TV now that are good, that are top stars in the business, all came through NXT. And NXT was something to watch, you know? And sometimes it was better than the main roster shows. Unfortunately, towards the end, you know, they just, the ratings couldn't really reflect it. Even though the wrestling was good, it's just, I don't know what it was. Maybe the champion or something wasn't really drawing people. But, you know, it's good to see Paul Levesque back, and hopefully it's to be a part of NXT for the long term.
Yeah, let's see for sure. Folks, coming up tomorrow night is the inaugural Forbidden Door pay-per-view, a joint project by All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling, emanating from the United Center in Chicago, the home of the NBA Chicago Bulls and the NHL Chicago Blackhawks. Wow, This is looking like a 15-hour pay-per-view, I think, Pat. But let me just run through the card real quick here and what stands out for you. And I hope you're sitting down because this might take a while here.
The card is so packed with matches that they're going to have to call it Forbidden Double Door. Okay?
That's right.
Because this is just – they're going to need two doors to get the card in because it's packed.
It's unbelievable. So here's the buy-in on the pre-show. We got Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland versus Yoshinobu Kimaru and El Desperado, Yoshihashi and Haruki Goto versus Aaron Solo and QT Marshall. God help us. Why QT Marshall is on television, I'll never know.
Hold on a second. I'm not going to have you crap on QT Marshall because QT Marshall is a hell of a wrestling trainer. You might not like him as a wrestler, but he contributes a lot to wrestling, and he deserves that. So I'm going to speak up for him.
That's fair. We got Max Caster and the Gun Club, consisting of Father Billy along with his sons Austin and Colton, against the LA Dojo, Yuya Uemura, Alex Coughlin, Kevin Knight, and the DKC. That's the pre-show just itself. On the main card, we have the AEW World Tag Team Championships as the Young Bucks rejoining the Bullet Club, I guess, for a night. Join current Bullet Club members El Fantasma and Hikuleo versus Darby Allin, Sting, Hiromu Takahashi, and Shingo Takagi, otherwise known as the Dudes with Attitudes. We have Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Sammy Guevara versus Eddie Kingston, Shota Umino, and Wheeler Yuta. Now, a special stipulation was just added tonight. Today, folks, via press release from All Elite Wrestling, the winner of this trios match will get the one-man advantage coming up next Wednesday night on Dynamite during their Blood and Guts event, which is, again, a sort of a takeoff of the old War Games. Obviously, it used to be a coin flip. That's not the case here. The winner of this trios match will get the one-man advantage. Seems a little predictable. The heels always win the coin toss. The heels always get the one-man advantage, so who knows. We have Zack Sabre Jr. versus the newest member of the Blackpool Combat Club. The opponent will be handpicked by Bryan Danielson. Unfortunately, will not be cleared to wrestle this weekend. I know that's a buzzkill for a lot of wrestling fans, and even next week during the Blood and Guts match, he will not be able to participate. The winner-take-all match for the IWGP and the Ring of Honor tag team titles, Jeff Cobb and Great Okan, the champions of New Japan, versus FTR, the Ring of Honor world tag team champions, my boys there, FTR, versus Roppongi Vice, which is consisting of Rocky Romero and Trent Beretta. The AEW Geographically Challenged Championship Fatal 4-Way, otherwise known as the All-Atlantic Championship, Clark Connors representing New Japan, a white guy, interesting, versus Malakai Black, representing the country of Holland, which, again, is nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean unless you paddle through the English Channel out of Amsterdam into the Atlantic Ocean, which could take days, unless you have really good cardio, versus Miro, who is from Bulgaria, where Bulgaria is nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean, versus Pac from England, who, well, coincidentally is close to the Atlantic Ocean because it's right there. We also have the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship match. God help us, Orange Cassidy will challenge the champion Will Ospreay. The AEW Women's Championship match, Thunder Rosa will be defended against Toni Storm. The IWGP World Heavyweight Championship in a Fatal 4-Way, my man Jay White, the Switchblade, the reigning champion, will take on Kashuga Okada versus Hangman Page, and the winner of the Owen Hart Foundation Memorial Cup Invitational Tournament, Adam Cole. And in the main event, let me take a breath here, for the interim AEW World Heavyweight Championship, Hiroshi Tanahashi will challenge Jon Moxley. Oof. All right, I can breathe now after reciting what seemed to be like my dissertation in grad school. Pat, what stands out for you here?
Hello? Holy
yes,
shit, are you done?
Yes,
oh,
I'm
my
done.
God. Man, I had to lay down like halfway through. It was fucking unreal. It's a real card. Okay, so first things first. Stay with me, okay?
Okay.
Kazuchika. Say, Kazuchika.
Kazuchika?
Kazuchika. Kazuchika Okada. Okay. I just have to say that.
Okada. My apologies.
Okay. Oh, and I also want to say Okada-san Ichiba, because he is. He's 1,000% Ichiba. But, I mean, look, dude, I'm dizzy, bro. It's just, it's like way too much. And I'll be honest, I'm sure that for as happy as these fans are to be there for that, bro, it's going to be exhausting for them. And they're going to be fatigued by the end of this show. I think Cassidy and Ospreay is actually going to be better than people think, only because Cassidy knows that style very well. Cassidy, like I've said before, trained to Shikara, and he has an excellent background in wrestling, particularly Lucha Libre, you know, strong style, puroresu, like all that stuff. I mean, you know, the grappling, all that shit. He can do all that stuff. He can do the World of Sports stuff. So even though the character is, you know, it's subjective, you know, Orange Cassidy to me is like the Beastie Boys. You either love him or hate him. And I think that he can go in that style. So him and Ospreay are going to have a really good match. I really, really think so. Okada, Jay White, Hangman, and Adam Cole. Three of those guys look like they belong there. One of them doesn't. I'm expecting Jay White to retain, only because it seems like a safe bet. You know, it seems like a safe thing to do. Jay White has improved, in my opinion. His physique, he's really gotten into great shape. I know he cut that promo backstage in Japan that everybody was ranting and raving about. It was, you know, it was just a lot of cursing. I think that he did a good job for what it was. And again, for the type of audience that likes that stuff, it's perfect. It's perfect. And it's perfect for AEW. So it works. But, you know, he's a guy that's definitely gotten a lot better. And Okada's gotten a lot better. That main event jumps out to me big time, and I think that could be match of the night, even with Adam Cole involved. I think personally, the way they're gonna put it together, they're gonna try and give Cole more shine in that match than anything else. So, and especially because Hangman's involved, and Hangman defended him online during the week. What else? We had Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa too, right?
Yeah, I think another match of the night candidate, in my opinion.
That could be good. That could be good. You know, the tag team match could be all right too. Moxley and Tanahashi, I think, is going to be solid because Moxley's a pro, and Tanahashi's a pro, and Moxley understands how to work that. I mean, again, it's all stuff that, like, I'm sure it's going to be good. And, like, when Cesaro comes out and he takes on Zack Sabre Jr., which Billy Body said during the week that it's going to be Cesaro. So, you know, we're going to see on that one. A lot of people suspect Johnny Gargano, because he's going to be in Chicago that same time. It could be Johnny. I think Cesaro would be the better choice. It'll be a nice pop for that crowd. But again, this is a dude who I think is just going to get lost in the shuffle anyway. So what does it even matter? Overall, potential for a lot of good wrestling matches, but not really anything that's like drawing me to like really want to go out of my way to see this. You know what I mean? There's just not a lot to really sink your teeth into there. No Bryan Danielson, for better or worse, no CM Punk. You know, I don't know. But we'll see. Hey, Forbidden Double Door, folks. Check it out. Sure to be a real slobber knocker.
It's a hell of a – it seems like it's going to be a long pay-per-view. It starts at 7 with the buy-in, 3 buy-in matches. My God. Again, the geographically challenged championship, the Atlantic – kind of hard to pick a winner here. I'm kind of thinking Miro. He's been off TV for a while. Maybe they want to kind of put him back in, you know, kind of a visible presence on TV. Don't know again, you know. The only guy whose country, you know, is close to the Atlantic Ocean there is a Pac. And that belt, again, like we said, that belt is, oh, my God. As an educator and someone who's taught geography and U.S. history, this is just baffling to me. With that title, but I gotta tell you, man, I really, I know you may not like hearing this, but I think that winner take all match for the tag team titles, for the Ring of Honor and new IWGP titles, that could be a really, really good match. And I'm trying not to show my bias for FTR, but I think that could be a really, really good match. The rest of the tag team matches, we got a lot of trios matches. You know, the Bucks reliving their Bullet Club days. Again, for whatever reason, that seems to be relevant there for that card. Fine. I don't think the Bucks needed to be in this against the dudes with attitudes. I know that even just saying that out loud brings up nostalgia from the 90s. But this show just seems, if it starts at 7, Pat, give me an over-under, bro. What do you think? Over-under, when does it end? I say the show's going to end around probably 12:30 a.m. to close to 1 a.m. What do you think?
I think the show is going to end. I mean, when do they start it?
They start at 7 p.m. with the buy-in.
What are you buying into?
I totally set myself up for that. I totally set myself up for that.
I'm gonna go, yeah, like 12:30, 1 o'clock. I'm gonna say like 12:30, 1 o'clock. You know?
Yeah, this is a long, and I get it. You want to feature New Japan stars, and real quick before we move on to our main event here today, this is the problem with what I don't like about the way AEW markets and promotes, where, you know, there's a lot of great talent on this card tomorrow. Yes, it's long. It's 12 matches, I think. It just seems extremely laborious. But where Tony Khan is doing a disservice to this pay-per-view is that for weeks now, we should have been seeing video packages about Okada, right, and other prominent New Japan stars, okay? We saw Ishii, who tragically, unfortunately, got injured recently, so he's out of the All Atlantic Championship Fatal 4-Way because he had qualified. But, you know, a lot of the AEW marks and fans online, oh, well, the reason Tony Khan doesn't do video packages, that's too WWE-ish. Well, guess what? You want that storytelling. You want that, because at times there's a nostalgia to it when you are featuring the history of workers in the business or why this match is taking place. Like, you need that. Tony Khan just thinks that, oh, you're supposed to know who every single person on this card is because you're just supposed to know. No offense, Tony, but, like, I love watching pro wrestling. I watch as much as I can. I watch Impact. I watch NWA. I watch all three shows on WWE. I watch AEW. I mean, I try to watch as much as I can, and I'm a busy person. But, again, this sanctimonious and presumptive arrogance by Tony Khan that he doesn't need to do that. Like, you're bringing Okada on the go-home show on Dynamite right before Forbidden Door. And I haven't seen the rating for Wednesday, so I can't comment on it. But you need to feature Okada and other guys on this program, like the IWGP Tag Team Champions. My goodness, like, this is a prominent tag team in the world. Don't just bring them out the week before Forbidden Door. Don't just bring out other guys leading up to it. Like, there's an importance to video packages, Pat. And, like, to your point offline, we've talked about, it's why we watch sports. Do you think when the Lakers played the Celtics in the NBA Finals back in 2010 that there wasn't a video package that described the history of the Lakers and Celtics? Or when we are the Niners and Cowboys during a playoff game and their history where it's been like a back and forth rivalry or other? Yeah. Like, I don't understand why is wrestling
Real Madrid, Barcelona, know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Liverpool, Man United.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Why?
Well, here's the thing. I think Khan doesn't do it because they don't want to be like WWE. And that's their whole thing. And I think that their fan base, they have these very, like, strange talking points, like little things that they don't like about what WWE does that they feel is somehow detrimental to the bigger picture of professional wrestling or something. I saw a tweet this week that kind of, like, summed it up. And it was a whole conversation. Billy Body got in on it. It was kind of funny. So this one guy who's goes by the handle of @AEW_Fritz, Fritz Von Erich, he said, the booking of #ForbiddenDoor is like playing WCW/NWO World Tour on the N64. I just unlocked somebody I've never heard of from a company I'm unfamiliar with. So this other fan who from a Twitter handle called Russell Cringe responded and said, well, unlike 1998, when that game came out, you don't have to tape trade or read PWI magazine. You can just use Google on the same device you used to tweet that and learn something or keep being ignorant. P.S. That game ruled. I often played as Scott Norton or Raven. Yeah, it was an awesome game. So Billy Body responded, and Billy Body said, you're ignorant if you don't enjoy something that you need to Google to find out why you're meant to be enjoying it. That's hashtag AEW fans in a tweet. It's your job to find out why you should enjoy this product. Otherwise, you're ignorant. I mean, I think that kind of sums up, like, this whole video package thing. It's like, I have to Google this person that's on my television that I'm supposed to be excited about, and I see that people in the arena are excited about, but I'm just not excited about it. Like, you know what I mean? And the sad part is Okada's a tremendous wrestler, so if he just put together a video package, like a highlight reel, him and Ospreay, him and Omega, like, you know, show the history to the people that don't know about this stuff. You know what I mean? Show them the history, teach them stuff. I mean, you know, it's not like it's a foreign concept in wrestling, you know? I mean, Impact does it. You know, WWE does it. WCW used to do it. Everybody used to do it. You know what I mean? They would show this stuff. You know, some of the historic moments that led to this big thing coming up. You know, every time it's WrestleMania season, what do they show? A classic WrestleMania moment or a classic WrestleMania match. It's a highlight reel. Because they get you souped, they get you ready, they get you in that mood. And little things like that, believe it or not, really add up and really help hype up an event. And that's what they should be doing, you know, for Forbidden Door, especially when you don't have a guy like Danielson or like Punk on the card.
It's mind-boggling to me that, again, AEW fans are so fickle about things like this, where it would just only add to the product. And why Tony Khan is so resistant is mind-boggling. But that's the news, folks, for this week here on Working the Marks. Again, and remember, you know, we always love to hear from you. So write to the show, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Once again, workingthemarks@gmail.com. That email is important as it will be very relevant in just a few minutes. So make sure you follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. Also, hit us up on Twitter @working_marks. Make sure that, you know, just drop a follow and check out our shows as we do plug our episodes on there. Once again, folks, especially the email, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us also on Instagram and our own personal Instagrams for the PR Superstar, @PaddyRican. That's PaddyRican. And, of course, my Instagram is @NoFilterUribe. That's @NoFilterURIBE. But, folks, this week's main event here, and you'll be very happy to know we put some work into this. But yes, we're proud to bring you the mid-year Marquee Award. Yes, folks, the Marquee Awards, the mid-year edition here. And I thought our audience would love that little nostalgia there, since I was a big fan of Entertainment Tonight. Still am, but probably more of a fan of the Mary Hart John Tesh days for sure. But, folks, yeah, we wanted to come up with the mid-year Marquee Awards. And once again, ain't no reference to anyone that we know named Mark or Marquee. So, again, don't take it as anything disparaging, ladies and gentlemen. But the mid-year Marquee Awards are here. Let's get to it. Let's start off with, ladies and gentlemen, let's start off with our nominees for Best Male Wrestler. And by the way, folks, again, write to the show. We want to have you decide from our list of nominees who you think is the mid-year winner for the Best Male Wrestler Award. And here are our nominees. All right, let's start off with, ladies and gentlemen, our nominees include the undisputed Universal WWE Champion Roman Reigns, Kushida Okada, Seth freaking Rollins, Cody Rhodes, Matt Riddle, Maxwell, Jacob Friedman, and our honorable mention, the Rated R Superstar, WWE Hall of Famer, Edge. Pat, who do you like in this category here?
Ah, man, this is a tough one. I mean, you know, you could pick all these guys for a variety of reasons. Roman, obviously, you know, everything he's been doing. MJF, Seth. I mean, Seth to me right now is, you know, the best wrestler in the world. Cody was really probably the biggest babyface in the business before he left. But, I mean, you got to acknowledge him. The Tribal Chief. The Tribal Chief, man. I'm sorry. It's the Tribal Chief for me. What do you think?
I got to tell you, man, for what he has done in this half year at the midway point, I mean, unifying the titles at WrestleMania, I mean, promo work is still gold. A guy that has put on quality matches for literally more than two full calendar years, okay, including a leap year, basically. Okay. I think it's hard to go against Roman Reigns. I mean, I think this entire list is great. And, folks, again, for those of you listening at home, write to us. We want to hear from you. So, you know, vote. Shoot us an email on who you like as the best male wrestler of the year. Once again, for our listeners, Roman Reigns, Kazuchika Okada, Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes, MJF, and an honorable mention of the Hall of Famer, Edge, the Rated R Superstar. I got to go with Roman, man. I think you're right. I mean, this is a guy who, now mind you, he was off TV for a little bit after WrestleMania. There were some reports that he and Brock were both injured during the match. That recovery time, I think, was maybe helpful for Roman. I know he did make an appearance in the six-man tag with his cousins, the Usos, against RK-Bro and Drew McIntyre. Listen, everybody on this list, man, Okada's had a great year. Rollins, Cody Rhodes returning back, Matt Riddle, how he's grown and developed, and especially now the singles push we're going to be seeing from him, the amazing work by MJF, whether it was his feud with CM Punk, and also with Wardlow and Edge, let's be honest, you know, started the year feuding with The Miz, good program with The Miz and his wife, Maryse, against him and his wife, Beth Phoenix, leading to Mania, the heel turn, forming Judgment Day. Again, everyone's very deserving here, but I'm with you, man. It's Roman Reigns for sure. All right, folks, now... here comes the nominees for Best Female Wrestler. All right, they include Big Time Bex, Becky Lynch, the reigning and defending Raw Women's Champion, Bianca Belair, the former SmackDown Women's Champion and newlywed, by the way, just out right now on her honeymoon, relaxing, maybe recuperating a little bit, Charlotte Flair, the reigning and defending NWA Women's Champion, Camille Brickhouse, the virtuoso from Impact Wrestling, Deonna Purrazzo, and yes, even an honorable mention, folks, the former AEW Women's Champion, the dentist, the MD, Dr. Britt Baker. Who do you like here, Pat?
I think they're all worthy nominees. You know, even Britt, who I'm not particularly fond of, she does her job for AEW. She's important for them. She does what she's asked to do, and she makes the most of how she's booked. Deonna, you know, is somebody I wrestled on a show with, in my last match, was a really nice person. And you could see was someone that was very determined to succeed in the business. I'm incredibly happy to see what she's been doing. Camille Brickhouse too, is somebody that I look at and I'm like, wow, you know, every time I see her, she's better than before. Charlotte, you know, what else can you really say? I mean, Charlotte's one of the best, if not the best, to do it. Bianca, just been stellar performer. But to me, top of the heap, you know, a number one, Big Time Bex. I've said it many times. I'll say it again. Becky's the GOAT as far as women goes. Everything she's been able to do, how she's been able to maximize her opportunities, the little things she does as a performer in the ring, her selling, her talking, you know, for her to be able to do that and to do that as a female and to be able to draw people the same level of interest, you know, as a Roman, it says a lot about her. And she always puts in a shift and she always makes it special and creates an atmosphere. So for me, I think there's no female out there better than Big Time Bucks right now.
I'm with you, man. And again, folks, right away at home, vote right to the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. We'll announce our winners next week, who you like here in our categories. I'm with you, man. I think, you know, Becky Lynch, since her return last year at SummerSlam, and what she did holding the title going into this year and the feud with Bianca was great. I see the promise of Bianca. She's an amazing worker, a great talent, has gotten much better on the microphone. It's still not a gimmick that I like, but it's not for me. That's not what Vince marketed it for. But a hell of a talent that's only going to get better. I think the other ladies have all had good years in their own way. I think Deonna, again, being a dual champion for the early part of the year, going into the spring, was amazing for her. She's gotten infinitely better since leaving NXT, well, since being released, theoretically, and joining Impact Wrestling. She has gotten infinitely better. Camille Brickhouse is a solid worker. I'm with you, man. I think even after dropping the man gimmick, right, after, I guess, some whatever happened with her and Ric Flair and marketing with Vince, who knows, her ability to reinvent herself, I think, is just simply amazing by Becky Lynch. So I'm with you. Even though she's not – even though she doesn't have a title right now, and it seems like she's not even in the upcoming Money in the Bank ladder match next weekend in Las Vegas, Big Time Bucks is still more than relevant. She's the Big Time for sure. Folks, let's move on here to our best tag team at the mid-year for the Marquee Awards. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the undisputed unified WWE Tag Team Champions, the Usos, Jimmy and Jay, RK-Bro, obviously, for a better part of the mid-year point up until Randy Orton's injury and rest time, solid tag team. I know this might pain Pat to hear, but the reigning, defending Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, FTR, my boys, Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler, good old Southern boys. The Briscoes, who had a great, great start to 2022 since Ring of Honor at the time was dissolved until Tony Khan bought it. They've made a really good run in Impact Wrestling, held the tag titles for a little bit. They just recently dropped it last weekend to another nominee here, the reigning and defending Impact champions, the Good Brothers. And even an honorable mention right now, ladies and gentlemen, the Alpha Academy. I think they've had a really, really good 6 months here at the mid-year point of 2022, Pat.
Mm-hmm. I think all the tag teams are worthy. Alpha Academy, to me, is a pick that I kind of lobbied for, especially because of everything that they've been able to do and how they've been able to continue to improve. Otis, you know, at one point, some people were saying he was the next Dusty Rhodes. But, you know, Otis had a nice little run, I think, as a babyface, won the Money in the Bank and stuff. Obviously, the push kind of didn't pan out, but the way he's been able to rebound, how they've been able to make him more legitimate. And these are two legitimate athletes in Chad Gable and Otis. So it's cool to see them. FTR, man, like I said, I think they're a very talented tag team. They're very good as far as how they perform in the ring. They're excellent workers. They get it. They understand. They've improved. I think right now this face run that we're seeing with them is probably the best we've seen them. I think they need more personality. I think they need, like, there's something missing there. You know what I mean? But they're a fantastic tag team for what they do. RK-Bro, you know, to me, they're excellent. I think how they've been able to get over the TV that they've been able to create, the dynamic that they've been able to kind of have. And really, for me, you know, Randy Orton, I think this is the best we've seen Randy as a face. I think it's the most genuine the most authentic we've seen Randy as a babyface. It's really weird. Because he's been a face before, but I think he's been a face before more because the fans knew he was going to do something devious.
I'm with you. I think the optic of Orton, this has been the most genuine babyface he's been. I think before it's been a little forced. I think it was just the sake of having him as a face. He's always been a better heel. But I think that teaming him with Riddle, I think, brought out a side of Orton that has always been very personable, has always had charisma, he's always been a good talker. Maybe not the iconic talkers we've grown up with, but again, Randy Orton, a very underappreciated, a guy who, and I know that this Monday we're going to be subjected to the 20-year celebration of John Cena on Monday Night Raw.
How are you being subjected? Well, like you're voluntarily watching it. You're not being subjected. Like, nobody's handcuffing you to a radiator and throwing buckets of cold water at you and making you watch it. It's not like fucking Clockwork Orange where they're keeping your eyes, you know, like, peeled open. Like, seriously. But I'm with you, though. I think Matt, you know, he's been able to bring out good stuff in Randy for sure, you know. But I I don't know. Because we're not going to see RK-Bro again, probably. We might not. You know what I'm saying? Because been reported Randy's getting the back surgery and stuff. But, I mean, I got to go with the Usos. For me, it's between the Usos and FTR. But the character work that the Usos have been doing, FTR just doesn't have it, like, as far as the character thing goes. And I don't know if it's the you know, maybe the way they're being presented. The wrestling's there. But, like, they need to be bigger characters, bigger personalities. Like, just being a good wrestling tag team is not gonna just cut it. You know what I mean? You need to have that character, and the Usos, I think, have been better characters.
Oh, I don't disagree. I'm with you. I think the Usos have just been great. Certainly the Bloodline faction. You know, on a side note, I'm not really a fan, I think, of some of this talk online or the way they're marketing the Bloodline. I get it. They got all the titles. But the idea that the Bloodline is the most – you know, the greatest faction ever in the history of pro wrestling / sports entertainment. I mean, I get why that's a good marketing slogan and why they're doing that, Pat. And that's certainly a topic for another show, but I'm not really a fan when I hear that. It kind of makes me, like, cringe a little bit. I'm like, well, no, I get it. They got all the belts, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're the greatest faction of all time. I think now...
But everybody does that. Everybody does that. Evolution did that. The Shield did that. DX did that. You know, everybody did that. You know, and how many defunct factions have we had that they said the same shit? You know, the Nexus, the Core. You know what I mean? So it's like everybody does that. That's just, like, to your point, that's good marketing, absolutely. But everybody does that. And again, that's to create that conversation. Well, I mean, come on, man. You know, give me a break here. Hold on a second. I got Google reminding me something. You want to hear what she calls? Oh, she calls me Patrick, you handsome MF-er. But anyways, I thought you guys might have caught it. That would have been very funny. But anyways, hey, it ain't like that movie Her, all right? I'm not fucking the thing. But, you know, dude, I just think that that's good marketing, and I think that the Usos know what they're doing, and they're just getting beat. So, yeah.
No, absolutely. And again, I think I'm with you. I think the Usos, up to this point at the mid-year, have been the best tag team right now in pro wrestling / sports entertainment. All right, folks, let's move on to best talker.
Okay,
that's I guess we had a little bit of a technical problem there. I thought the audio
we finally get
gone
a budget
off.
You know, we finally get a budget for some production here, and of course the guys in the truck, they just don't want to get it together here.
I tell you where's Kevin Dunn when we need him, you know? Jesus Christ. All right, well, folks, our best talker, our nominees are Big Time Becky Lynch, Maxwell Jacob Freeman, Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman, and I know that this is my honorable mention, I think, to this. I think Bron Breakker. Your thoughts, Pat, on the mid-year point here, the mid-year marquees for best talker.
The Bron Breakker thing I'm kind of shocked about, but I like that that's in there because it could create a good conversation. I mean, he's not Scott Steiner yet. You know, he's not. He's, I mean, he's done some math. He's definitely done some math on TV. But, I mean, he's not Scott Steiner. Hell, he's not even Rick yet. I mean, I don't know. There she goes again.
There are some reminders for Patrick Johansson, NFL.
Okay. She's got some reminders for me. But Scott Steiner, I mean, you know, it's not there yet. It's no Rick Steiner yet. I mean, I get you. But he has done well with the stuff that he's been told to do. It's been direct. It's been to the point. Paul Heyman, I mean, what can you say, dude? I mean, the guy could hype up anything. You know, the guy could take two New York City cockroaches and hype it up into a fight and sell out Madison Square Garden. You know, MJF, I think he's done amazing with every opportunity that he's been given. He's knocked it out of the park. I think that he has a lot of pressure on his shoulders for being so young. And I think that it's got to weigh on him sometimes. It does, but the confidence, the poise, everything he's done, it's been great. I think for that audience, his mic work is really, really good. But I could do without the cheap heat, I'll be honest. And then Becky to me, she's just, I mean, best female talker, probably the best talker, I'd say outside of Heyman, maybe Roman. Miz, I mean, there's a lot of good talkers there. There's a lot of good scene. I mean, you got a lot of good talkers in the E. But Becky, what she's able to do, and again, to generate the interest, to sell out stadiums along with Roman, it really says a lot. I'm going to have to go with Becky. I'm going to have to go with Becky on this one for me. I am. How about you? Hello,
Pat. Sorry there. Okay, I hope you're
there. Are you there?
Pat?
Hello, can you hear me?
I'm there. Can you hear me? Yeah, I'm here. I'll tell you, where's Kevin Dunn when we need him? When he's not you know, engaging in insider trading. Jesus. Okay. I got to tell you, man. I'm gonna disagree with you. I got to go with MJF here. And I'll tell you why. I think that, notwithstanding the work/shoot promo that he had a few weeks back in Inglewood at the Forum that everyone was buzzing about the internet, I just think what he's been doing, and I get why you're not always a fan of his delivery because it's just cheap heat, but leading up to that feud with that match with Punk at Revolution, the Doc Holler match, those promos, after that, the program with Wardlow to leading into Double or Nothing, I just think MJF has just been so solid, and as a heel, and I get it, Becky's been doing great work as a heel. I just got to go with MJF because I think that there's a buzz about MJF that continues. Not to say it doesn't continue for Becky. Of course it does. I just think that what MJF has been able to do, I think, resonates a lot. He's very young, and I get it that, you know, he relies on cheap media, and I understand all that. And I understand
it resonates to that audience, though. It resonates to that audience, though. That's the thing. It doesn't resonate on a bigger level. Becky resonates more on a bigger level. I mean, even the stuff with Punk, they had to recycle Summer of Punk stuff. They had to recycle ROH stuff. You know what I mean? That's not creative. Everything Becky's done is creative. Ever since they took the man away from her, the way she's been able to reinvent herself as big-time Bex, still be important, still be original, and not have to steal heat from the past. You know what I mean? Like, all the stuff that they did, like, I don't know. I think the best thing he did was actually the Wardlow stuff, you know? But even that got a little too telegraphed. And then the work shoot, all these Mark reporters, they ruined it, you know, because they had no credibility. So when they started reporting something as true, you knew it was bullshit, you know? So they killed the work before it even got started, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I think Becky does a lot more, and she's way more creative.
All right. Well, again, and we'll let the fans decide. Folks, vote workthemarks@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and who you select, again, during the Mid-Year Marquee Award. Let's move on to Best Feud.
Oh, boy.
And I guess we're going to – I'll tell you. I don't know what's going on here, Kevin. Get me Kevin Dunn on the phone here, folks. Get me Kevin Dunn. I need Kevin Dunn here down at the studio here as much as possible. This is This is true. But folks, I'll even take Joe. There we go. All right. I'll take John Laurin. I'll take John Laurinaitis at this point, you know, helping us with production at this point. All right, folks, best feud, our nominees are Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, Cody and Seth Rollins, big time Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair, MJF and CM Punk, and Tommaso Ciampa and Braun Breaker. Those are our nominees for best feud here in the Media Marquees. What do you like, Pat?
All very worthy candidates, I think. But for me personally, I'm going to go with Rollins and Cody. I think the story that they told, and even though Cody swept at all three, I liked it because it was unusual booking from WWE, especially with the way that they booked the feuds. You know, it's called 50-50 booking. And, you know, they kind of do that and always end up doing the rubber match. It's been a staple of the business for a very long time. But I like that they swept all three here, and they kind of added that element, you know, of realism, where there's always that one team that, you know, could beat that really good team or that undefeated team, or that there's that one fighter that could always beat that undefeated fighter, you know, or you know, everybody's got that one guy that's like their toughest opponent. And I like that they're doing that with these two. And I probably expect it to lead to some sort of ladder match for the Money in the Bank briefcase when Cody can come back. But I enjoyed all three of the matches. I think all three of the matches were great in their own way. Obviously, the Hell in the Cell match, that one stood out the most. But for me, definitely the best feud of the half year so far. How about you?
No, I'm with you. I think the build-up to Cody coming in, and it's funny because, you know, obviously he had left AEW, decided not to re-sign with Tony Khan. It had been rumored for weeks, right? The internet, all these dirt sheet writers and reporters were saying, well, no, Cody's going to resign. Cody's going to stay. Cody's going to run Ring of Honor. Cody's going to do this. Cody, you know, Billy Body, as always, nailed it. I think Cody saw the writing on the wall with what was going on with AEW, with the other EVPs, with Kenny Omega and the Bucks. And obviously there was
Can I interrupt you there one second, Profe? What do you think was the reason behind the falling out? What do you think? Because that's something I don't think we ever really talked about. But what do you think the reason was ultimately that led to the fallout between Tony Khan and Cody Rhodes?
I don't think it was money. I think if Tony wanted to keep him, he would have. I think Cody saw the writing on the wall for months now. The creative direction, the production, the way that AEW is being presented. I think Cody got tired of the fact, listen, Cody grew up in the business. You know, his last name still carries significant weight. And I think that the butting of heads with Omega and the Bucks, who, again, great talented guys, but let's be fair, the Bucks and Omega have been relegated to, they just like comedy and humor on television. And you could tell with their gimmicks, their presentation. And I think Cody wanted to get past that. I think Cody was like, you know, I've hit my ceiling here. I'm not going to go any higher than I can here. Tony's not going to push me. Not because in a self-centered sort of way, because that's not what Cody is. I think he just saw that this is it's a production that's not being run well. And I think he probably just sat there with Tony and said he just probably didn't like where this was going. And you could tell the bad booking, the ratings. Again, the traffic wasn't great per se. Yeah, they cracked a million a few times, but not even a handful. Like, I still have fingers left on my hand that, you know, the AEW didn't crack a million thus far in 2022. So I think Cody saw the writing on the wall. I think he was a hot commodity. I think he positioned himself into a good bargaining situation with Vince, where he knows Vince can spend money, where he knows Vince. He knows what he knows that he could sign with Vince and he could debut at Cowboy Stadium in Dallas at WrestleMania, where there's 75,000 people. Guess what? He wasn't going to see 75,000 people in a building that's AEW related, maybe in a meet and greet. Okay. So I think he saw the fact that he could prosper more under Vince. It's a shame about what happened to him, tearing his pectoral. He's going to be out probably for the rest of this year. which I'm sure will spark some you know, speculation that he'll be one of those surprise entrants at the Rumble in January. But I just think it wasn't money. I just think he felt he could be better presented with WWE, and it shows. Look at his entrance at WrestleMania. Look at the next month at Backlash. And look at, you know, at Hell in a Cell, three PLEs that he came out to, was marketed really, really well. And let's be fair, before he got hurt, what did Vince have Cody doing? He had him doing a promotion for Money in the Bank. Yes, it fell through. It's not going to be at Legion Stadium where the Raiders play, to be moved to the MGM. But guess what? That's what Cody's good at. He's not just a good wrestler. He's good to do all this pop culture marketing stuff. And Tony Khan wasn't going to use him that way. And I think that was the writing on the wall. I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. But to your point, I'm going to go with Cody and Seth. I agree with you. I think that trilogy was amazing. I think what we saw in Hell in a Cell was arguably maybe top three all-time Hell in a Cell matches, I would say, in that
field. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We said it on the podcast, or I did, that to me it's an all-timer. You know, it's an all-time great. And just the storytelling, all the full circle stuff with the hammer and the throne and all this other, you know, all these little, you know, subliminals there, the Cody, the Dusty polka dots, you know, all that shit. You know, him being Dusty's student, Dusty's brightest, you know, prospect, and you know, that being Dusty's son, I mean, it was perfect storytelling. And to piggyback onto the whole Cody AEW thing, I think, yeah, man, he left because I think he knew that it wasn't going to work out there. But more importantly, I think there were fundamental differences about the business and about wrestling that Cody had, because he grew up in the business. He was raised in the business. And a lot of these guys weren't going to understand that because they kind of just, you know, They weren't around that. They were from a different school. So yeah, that's definitely what I would expect it would be.
And let's be fair, Cody will forever be remembered as one of the guys that tried to change pro wrestling in 2019. Yeah, we've had Impact for 20 years, but this was a company that from the very first day you could tell that they wanted to challenge Vince. That was Tony Khan's mission. So getting the books, Kane Omega and Cody Rhodes on board, guys that were, you know, prominent names in pro wrestling. Yes, overseas in New Japan, people knew him in the States, but I think that he'll forever be remembered as a guy that helped change the landscape of pro wrestling by being part of that, sort of the genesis of what AEW was back in 2019. Folks, again, let's move on to our next category here. Oh, great for the production truck to get back on business. I guess they're back from lunch. All right, folks. most likely to succeed for the rest of 2022. And our nominees are Toxic Attraction, the faction, not just Mandy Rose, the entire faction. Carmelo Hayes, the reigning defending NXT North American Heavyweight Champion. The NXT World Heavyweight Champion, Bron Breakker. Asuka and Matt Riddle.
That's a tough one, but if I had to pick, I'm going to go with Matt Riddle, because I think Matt Riddle's going to end up getting a pretty big singles push.
I got to disagree, man. I think the way that Bron Breakker has been presented since the end of last year, again, winning the War Games match, being the guy that, you know, represented the new NXT, the 2.0 NXT, going into the year, beating Tommaso Ciampa, being the new face of NXT. Yeah, he dropped the belt, you know, briefly to Dolph Ziggler. I think that was a good rub for him to have Ziggler put him over and really feature him, to beat him. The NXT right after WrestleMania in Dallas was great. I think these feuds he's had with Joe Gacy, I think the fact that he is just continues to get better and better and better. Yes, he's embraced his last name. There are subtle little hints that are dropped during broadcast, during the entrance, during the singlets. I mean, he's literally wearing his dad's singlets for all intents and purposes, or a remake of them. You know, he is out there killing it on the microphone. He's carrying this brand on his back. I would argue for the rest of this year, I would say the mid-year marquee should go to Bron Breakker, Pat.
I think you make a good case for him, but I just think that he's going to end up staying stuck in NXT. I don't know if he's going to get called up just yet. I thought if he would have dropped the title, he might have been called up, but I think that, you know, he's probably going to end up carrying the brand. I know you had kind of mentioned something about, like, you know, you had thought that since they were going back out on the road, that he would be, like, a big attraction for him. And I got to agree with you because I don't see anybody else there that's really going to take, you know, his place right now. So, yeah, I mean, I think the future looks bright, but I just kind of feel like Matt's going to get that bigger push sometime soon, is going to be featured in prominent matches. And, again, like, look at the stuff that he's doing. You know, he's already got some of the hottest-selling merch out there. I just feel like he's in a more, you know, prime position to really capitalize on what comes its way in the rest of the year.
Oh, listen, again, folks, vote at home, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Write to us. Vote online. Again, shoot us an email. And who you like in our categories this year so far, ladies and gentlemen, at the mid-year point for the mid-year Marquee Awards here on Working the Marks. And our last category, folks, you're going to like this one for sure. Funniest Spot Fest of the mid-year, ladies and gentlemen. And our nominees are Adam Cole and the Young Bucks against Christian and the Jurassic Express, Jeff Hardy versus Darby Allin, the Usos and Roman Reigns against RK-Bro and Drew McIntyre, MJF versus Wardlow recently at Double or Nothing, and, of course, the Jericho Appreciation Society against Eddie Kingston and the Blackpool Combat Club, along with Santana and Ortiz at the Anarchy in the Arena match at Double or Nothing. I don't know, man. A lot of good nominees here for funniest spot because there's a lot of good stuff here. Humorous stuff, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't know, man. All this stuff to me was just, you know. It's definitely the kind of wrestling I'm not interested in, so I'm just trying to think of the match that I'm least interested in. So what was that Anarchy in the UK fucking match? What was it?
Recently at Double or Nothing, it was pretty much a glorified street fight. It was the Jericho Appreciation Society against Eddie Kingston, against Jon Moxley, Bryan Danielson, along with Santana and Ortiz in the Anarchy in the Arena match. They pretty much went all over the MGM Arena in Las Vegas. And it was just, and when I say spot fest, I mean, this was just absurdity on steroids, whether it was the bumps they took, whether it was just going all around the building. I mean, again, folks, the purpose of the category, I mean, again, it's what it says. It's the funniest spot fest because you have to laugh at this. I think a lot of these nominees in the category, I think if you watch the matches, I mean, you're sitting there laughing through a lot of the match itself because of the spots. And I get that the majority here are, you know, all AEW matches, and rightfully so, because it's a spot fest every week, if not on Dynamite and Rampage, it's at the pay-per-views. Again, I would go with, I'm going to go with Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin. If anyone watched that match, that was a ridiculous spot fest, whether it was Darby Allin doing a swanton off a ladder on top of Jeff Hardy on top of another ladder, whether it was Jeff doing another crazy spot fest. And again, my thoughts and prayers to Jeff Hardy. It was reported this week he did check himself into a rehab facility. So my thoughts and prayers to him that he finds sobriety and can recover and you know, be productive again and healthy. I would argue Darby Allin and Jeff Hardy was probably the funniest spot fest thus far at the mid-year point of 2022, Pat.
I'm just going to go with whatever the Young Bucks are in, you know. because that's usually pretty egregious. But, I mean, the Anarchy in the UK match, that was really bad and a shame is what happened ultimately. But I'm going with whatever the Young Bucks are in. What's the match that the Young Bucks are in? Them against the Lucha Brothers or something?
It was a Dynamite, I believe, where the Bucks teamed up with Adam Cole, the Owen Hart Foundation inaugural Memorial Cup Tournament heavyweight champion, against Christian and the Jurassic Express. It was the False Count Anywhere match. So that was, if you remember, that was just... I lost track of how many super kicks there were in that match, how many diving swantons off the top rope onto a crowd of people.
That's what I'm going with. Because whatever the Young Bucks are in is usually outrageous.
No, absolutely. But, folks, those are our categories. Those are our nominees. Again, folks, write to the show, workingthemarks@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. Vote online. We'll read the results next week as to who won the inaugural Mid-Year Marky Award. Again, folks, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Vote. Here's what you have to say about the Mid-Year Marky Award. Pat, I got to tell you, man, it's been a good show here. Again, as we wrap up the month of June, we'll see what Forbidden Door brings us tomorrow night, and whether or not it's a 7 or 17-hour pay-per-view. We'll be back next week here, ladies and gentlemen, to preview Money in the Bank emanating from the beautiful MGM Garden in Las Vegas, Nevada. A hell of a pay-per-view. Would have been nice to have seen it at the Allegiant Stadium, but like everything else, hey, maybe it's getting a little expensive for people to shell out money for a long weekend in Vegas, much less for wrestling/sports entertainment, but just to go to Vegas, who knows. But should be a good card next week, which we will preview here. We'll give you results of the Forbidden Door. Hopefully I can not put Pat to sleep as I'm reciting the winners of the matches, since
it's a long card to be sure.
But Pat, before we sign off for this week here, what are you looking forward to coming up?
I mean, we'll see what happens with this Forbidden Door show. Child Actor is going to be playing next week out in Jimmy's in Kearney. I believe the doors open, or the first band goes on at about 8. So you might want to get there around 7 o'clock to come and check us out. And also, have you ever noticed that David Gilmour, the guitarist of Pink Floyd, and the Sandman both kind of look alike? I'd like to thank my buddy Street Tough for that one. So I leave you with that one, folks. You take it easy. You have a fantastic rest of your weekend, and I'll be right back with you next week. And sorry about the technical difficulties.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we apologize again. You know, our budget will be growing, folks, so please bear with us here on the show as we continue to bring you what we will say unequivocally and absolutely and certainly the best analysis of pro wrestling / sports entertainment every single week here on the show. And again, ladies and gentlemen, look out for a Real Talk with Fernando Uribe live on Monday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern time. You can check it out on Jersey First TV on YouTube, and you can also check it out on Facebook Live via StreamYard. When it comes to this show that's just getting real, real buzz here in the Garden State and, of course, in the New Jersey political arena, obviously you definitely want to check it out. This Monday, we do have the executive director of the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce. So as Pride Month comes to an end, I know Gus Pernaranda and myself will have a lot to talk about this Monday, so you definitely want to tune in for that, folks. But always remember, ladies and gentlemen, no one's doing it better, because every single week here, he is the PR superstar, Patrick Rivera. I'm the professor, New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, Fernando Uribe, and we are always working the march. We'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio, and don't forget, let's keep on talking. ¶¶